So, thanks for dropping by. I've been talking about it for a while in drips and drabs, but I figured I'd just lay it all out because I see this time of year, the excitement that is built by the NCAA tournament. I think it's ironic, even though it's a few days after I had planned on posting this, that I'm doing it on the first Saturday of the tournament because, agree or disagree, the first 2 days are the best, but there's a little bit of a letdown on Saturday. It's like, oh, only 8 games. Well, good news. My idea for expanding the NCAA tournament, and don't worry, I'll start off by saying why I understand people don't want it. I appreciate the fact that if you're one of those people that you're listening to this, I will also tell you why it needs to happen, and I will give you sort of a scaled-down version of an expanded field to 80 teams, but then the version that I think would be the real solution to what the problem is right now with the system that is NCAA basketball. And that is expanding the field to 96. We'll give you all those details. And oh yeah, with that expansion to 96, you know those first 2 days? You'd have two more of them as a nice little warm-up act. We'll get there in just a second. But yes, I definitely understand why people think don't mess with the NCAA tournament. Now, if you are one of those people, I, again, understand it, but I'll ask you a question. Do you care more about A, the state of NCAA basketball, the plight of so many mid-major teams, or B, your bracket? Answer honestly. It's B, isn't it? So, yeah, if you don't really care who's in the tournament, of course you don't think it needs to be expanded. If you think it's perfect the way it is, then great. But as we saw, not just with South Florida, by the way, this is not something that I just pieced together because I need to come up with a way for the Bulls to get into the NCAA tournament. I mean, we'll just let you know, in my system, the Bulls would not be getting an at-large. They'd have to play their way in. More on that in just a little bit. But this is not a perfect system. Tell me about Indiana State winning the Missouri Valley Conference and finishing in the top 30 of the computer rankings, and that's not good enough. It is not perfect. Think about it if you were the head chef at the best restaurant, not just in Tampa Bay, but just voted best restaurant in Florida. And you cook all the meals, basically. You are doing all the work. And you are getting paid 5% of what the guy whose name on the restaurant is. And someone comes up to you and says, oh, you cook at that restaurant? Oh, man, that place is perfect. I would not change a thing about your system. It's perfect. And you're like, really? It ain't perfect. I'm getting Indiana State salary, and that's not fair. So I think this year is probably the best example, and I think it ties in well with what happened in college football. Anyone that was against expanding from four saw what happened with Florida State and that impossible decision that the committee had to make, and you realize that there is room not to let everybody in, not to go crazy with it, but to realize that there are more deserving teams out there, and there's just not room. And this year, basketball met the equivalent with not just an Indiana State and a South Florida not getting in, but the teams that got left out, got squeezed out by some of those conference tournament results, were actually really good teams. Indiana State had a net ranking of 29. That's the highest ranking to not make the tournament. Well, St. John's would have been the second highest, right behind them at 32. But as we go back to what people who are against expansion, if it's not all about your bracket and not caring about the teams are, say, and this is a legitimate complaint for sure, that expansion would make the regular season meaningless. Yeah, if you did it the wrong way, and I understand what that means when people say it. They're saying that if you let more teams in and half of those ended up being power conference teams all around 500, yeah, the regular season is meaningless because you just have to win half your games. Well, I would counter that by telling you, first of all, my idea would not let that happen. But secondly, right now we have a meaningless regular season. If you're not in a power conference or now the Mountain West, your regular season, except for a few stray examples, and that's not enough, is meaningless. Think about it. Indiana State, USF, won their regular season championships, and it meant nothing. They still had to win their conference tournament. And it's not just for those two teams. It is for everybody that's not in one of the top eight conferences. And again, every now and then, a stray exception. But if Indiana State at number 29, the highest net-ranked team to not get in other words, that wasn't an exception, something has to change. And that's what the issue is right here. Men's basketball, way more than any other sport, has had way more teams in leagues that aren't considered the power leagues. We're not just talking mid-majors. We're talking about smaller conferences that show they can pull off upsets and make huge runs. In other words, the talent is so deep. And yet, here's the problem. It's not access. Yeah, everybody has access to the NCAA tournament. You know it. If you win your league, you're getting in. That sounds great. The problem is, for 75% of the conferences, it's their only point of access. Now, I realize there are bad leagues or weak leagues that should only get their conference tournament winner. I get that. But there are at least a dozen. We're talking about Sunbelt, WAC, whose champions, by the way, were James Madison and Grand Canyon. Not bad teams. Missouri Valley, Atlantic 10, Mid-American, Ivy. The big middle that is filled with talented teams. We're seeing it with the Atlantic 10. Dayton was the third-place team in that league. Duquesne was the sixth-place team. You had two teams tied for first, Richmond and Loyola. I think they're probably good, too, since they both beat Dayton and finished above them. But our system dictates there's not enough room for them. Guess what? Expansion would take care of that. And it would do it in an entertaining way. I look back at not just the conference champions. Indiana State and Drake played each other in the Missouri Valley Final. In an expanded field, they're just playing for hardware. Both teams are getting in. But in our quote-unquote perfect system, which ain't perfect, only one team was going to get in. And I know people would say, well, too bad, win the game. All right. What if I told you that, I assume most people listening to this are baseball fans, if you're a Tampa Bay Rays fan, which I am, and if not, if you're a Yankees or Red Sox fan, just sub in your team. And let's say the Rays and the Yankees were tied for best record in the American League going into the last weekend of the season. They split the first two games. The Rays were up 5-3 in Yankee Stadium. Two outs, two strikes, bottom nine, and the Yankees hit a walk-off homer. The next day, the playoff pairings come out, and the Rays aren't in the playoffs. They have the second-best record. Rob Manfred just says, you know what? Last year, the Orioles had the best record, and they got swept by Texas. And for that matter, the other East team, the Rays, got swept by Texas. So we kind of just have this system where we decided without announcing it that the AL East was only good enough for one team. So too bad, you should have won your conference tournament. Division title. So if you're one of those people that would say, too bad Indiana State should have beaten Drake, first of all, now you know how it sounds. Second of all, now you know how incredibly unfair it is. And I know it's an extreme example because team with the second best record in baseball and any other pro sport gets in. By the way, Princeton had the sixth best record in college basketball and didn't get in, sixth best out of 360 teams. But that is the whole problem, that whole notion of, well, they're a one-bid league, well, they're a one-bid league. It can be changed. It can be changed in a way that makes the postseason even more exciting and the regular season even more meaningful. So that Indiana State-Drake championship game would have just been for hardware. Both those teams would have been in the field. By the way, Drake, a top 50 team, Indiana State, as we mentioned, in the top 30 of the net. We're not just giving spots away. That is for darn sure. But we are creating room for everybody in the middle to have a chance besides just having to win their conference tournament. Yes, the regular season has more meaning. And yes, there will be some power conference teams that have a chance to get in, and we are going to give them some at-larges, but not to crazy effect. So, let's get to it. And again, I get it. If you're one that doesn't care about the Missouri Valley Conference, you're like, I love these conference tournaments. Win or done. Win or go home. I'll use one more non-basketball example if that's how you really think. If you love the tension, yeah, if you're not involved, if your family's not one of the families of the players or the coaches that work so hard and have such an incredible season, then you lose in a close final and that's not good enough. Well, let's say you had a perfect driving record and you are the most careful driver. You're very aware of everybody around you, and one day you get popped for speeding for going 56 in a 55, and it blows up your record. In other words, you're a great driver, you had a great driving season, and you mess up by just a little bit, and it's all out the window. Your insurance doubles. Would you like that system? Well, that's what we have in NCAA Division I basketball, and I'll tell you how I'll change it. And I, by the way, realize it's that way in every other Division I sport. It's all around the power conferences, but again, men's basketball specifically is the one by leaps and bounds over any other sport where we have seen those teams that aren't in the power conferences can beat them regularly, but are only limited to that one chance per conference. Remember a couple of years ago, St. Peter's, Elite Eight. Well, they were the second best team in their conference. Iona, Rick Pitino, was the best team, and they had no chance at an at-large, even though they were a top 100 team. Last year, worst conference in the country, Fairleigh Dickinson was actually the conference tournament runner-up in the NEC. They lost to Merrimack because they weren't eligible. FDU got the spot, and I think we saw what happened. I know that doesn't happen all the time, but it happened. They beat Purdue. better example probably last year is what happened with Princeton beating Arizona in a 2-15 game and then showing it wasn't a fluke by making the Sweet 16. Princeton had to win the Ivy League tournament. They beat Yale in the final. Yale was the regular season champion. You know where the Ivy League tournament was held? At Princeton. I don't know. Do you think Yale could have been a good team too? Nope. Our perfect system dictates that the Ivy League's only good enough for one team. And by the way, on Selection Sunday last year, Yale was ranked ahead of two power conference teams that got put in Dayton, one of them being Arizona State from that Pac-12, of course, that Princeton knocked off Arizona from. I could give so many examples, but I think you get the idea. All right, let's get to my system. Let's do the light version first, just so you can ease into it and see what I'm talking about, where we wouldn't give every conference a chance for a second team. That's my 96-team idea. This would assure every conference champion gets a chance. It would be an 80-team field where you would add just four at-larges, and it would be based on this year's first four out: Seton Hall, Pitt, Oklahoma, and yes, Indiana State. And here's the major part of this concept that has to happen. If it's, again, just telling the committee, add this many teams, you're going to have the same problem you have now. You're just going to move it on down the line. Instead of deciding between this conference's champ and this power conference's eighth team, it'll be this slightly weaker conference's champ against this power conference's 10th team. No, you have to structure it so you're taking those decisions away and you're giving the non-power leagues a certain amount of spots. And that is what the NBA does, a play-in system, where you end up with eight teams from each conference, but four teams play in for the last two spots. So in the 80-team version, it would be pretty similar to the NBA, where you would just add those four at-larges and then eight play-in spots, whether it's straight out eight games. Probably can't have them all in Dayton, because what if Dayton's one of those teams? Probably put them in two cities. But then that doesn't necessarily leave room for every eligible conference champ, so you might have to even go past 16 and just have the excess weaker conference champs play each other in the first round, and then eight final spots are determined. And looky what you'd have. You'd have eight conference champs playing the next best eight. USF would play a Villanova or Cincinnati. I think you see that that wouldn't be such a bad thing. But let's get to the 96-team idea, because that's, if you're listening, NCAA, Michael Kelly, could you forward this on to them? My real idea, which would allow every conference the chance for a second team. And that's another reason why the number is so high at 96. And just so you know, originally I was trying to get everything for an 80-team field. I've not just started doing this. This is how I fill my spare time sometimes. The reason 80 with a play-in wouldn't work is your first round of the NCAA tournament to get from 80 to 64, you'd have all those play-in winners playing the weaker conference champs, and you're automatically eliminating half the Cinderellas. With 96, you've got room for every kind of potential Cinderella, and not just good stories, good teams. And yes, some of them are going to come from the power conferences, but they will have to earn it. Now, for starters, you would, in my system, indeed add 12 at-larges to the field, but with this huge twist, and that is simple. Guarantee that at least 12 conferences get in at large. We're not assigning them ahead of time. We all know who the first 10 are probably going to be. Now, this year, 10 conferences got in at large. Apparently, that's the maximum, because FAU got one from the American. Dayton, those are the two teams with the great computer ranking that didn't win their conferences. And then, of course, Gonzaga. So Power 6, Mountain West, and then Dayton, FAU, and Gonzaga. Indiana State should have made it 11 conferences with an at-large, but this system mandates it. Could the power leagues have a problem with that? Sure they could, but I'll just slap them with my microphone first and remind them that there's still going to be plenty of at-larges, and anyone that had a good season, at worst, is going to make it into the play-in system and get a chance to prove it on the court instead of just being handed the spots. That's the beauty of this. But listen, I really want this thing to get pushed through, so instead of just saying take what you get, I actually have changed a little bit, and we'll do it at the very end when I say, if you're still around by then, how it would actually play out from a days of the week point of view. We wouldn't just have Selection Sunday. We'd have, well, I know about Find Out Friday. We might even have a Weed Out Wednesday, but what I definitely want to do is not go all on one side. So, just in case there are any power conference commissioners listening and you're going, no chance, kiddo, we're going to compromise and give you some things that I think would make everybody happy and make the Derek Sharp play-in slash expansion thing happen. But I would also, and this isn't necessary, originally I had 16 conferences getting at-large, but I started looking at some of those teams that would be getting in with at-larges, and they were ranked well below the teams that would be getting left out of the play-in system. It's okay if you get an automatic bid, whatever your ranking is, but to be handed an at-large, it shouldn't be that easy. So I would say 12 minimum plus any remaining league that has a team in the top 80. Why top 80? Because the at-larges take it to 80 teams, and that would have allowed two more leagues, the Sun Belt, home of James Madison, with Appalachian State, which was actually the regular season champion. So pretty good team, I'm guessing. Ranked 72nd, and you'd be surprised who the other one would be. Cal Irvine from the Big West. So those are your at-larges, and yes, the last eight would probably all come from power conferences, and yes, the Big East would load up in this case, so they wouldn't be able to grumble. In fact, you could have had four of the remaining eight all go to the Big East, definitely for Seton Hall, St. John's, and Nova, maybe Providence. Then you're looking at Oklahoma and Pitt, and the last two, no, probably not the Bulls. Remember, the FAU Owls already have an at-large. So again, I'm not doing this just to come up with some wacky system that makes sure the Bulls get in easily. They'd have to play their way in. I think those last two spots would go to the likes of Wake Forest and Cincinnati. And if you're going, no, no, no. Well, Cincinnati finished with a net of 37. Virginia was 54. Wake Forest finished with a net of 43. South Carolina, which got destroyed in the first round, was 51. Not saying South Carolina or Virginia shouldn't have gotten in, just saying that's a great example of how putting in some extra teams with at-larges is not the end of the world. You're not rewarding bad teams. And another side note, the Bulls would have gotten an at-large had, of course, FAU won the conference tournament, just to use this most recent example. So here's the play-in system. 48 teams playing for the last 16 spots. But unlike the neutral site Dayton thing, you would actually have eight host cities. And again, you're not just telling the committee to pick the next date. You are gearing this for the non-power conference teams, to wit, those eight hosts are the best eight teams that finished in the top three of their conference standings. We're not just looking to take care of the conference champs. If you gave the best eight conference champs hosting, you're going to have some pretty weak teams get to host. They'll get in the play-in, but not getting to host. In fact, using just straight off computer rankings, only three of the eight hosts were regular season champs. Your USF Bulls, Richmond Spiders, who finished a little bit ahead of them in the net, atop the, as we've seen, pretty good Atlantic 10 conference, and then the best of the rest of the conference champs, High Point, ranked 110, by the way. The other five teams, co-champs of the A-10, Loyola, easy pick there. Third place in the Missouri Valley, Bradley, which was top 60 behind Indiana State and Drake. Third place in the West Coast Conference, San Francisco, mid-60s. Another third place team, Cornell from the Ivy, finished in the 90s. And it sounds a little arbitrary to say, okay, to host, you have to be in the top three. First of all, again, it can't just be conference champs hosting because, yeah, that would guarantee the Bulls and Richmond get to host, and they will anyway. But after them, you might be getting into the Quinnipiac-Merrimack hosting range. Those teams that are well outside the top 150 and sometimes out of the top 200, getting into the play-in is enough. But we want all the hosts to be in the top 100 or very close. But remember, there's a ton of conferences in the middle. We're not talking about the top eight. We're not talking about the bottom 10 that are just stuck only getting one team. Now, their second and or third place teams, the better ones anyway, are really going to get the edge by being named host. And that's what we're laying out right here. And the last host right outside the top 100, Hofstra from the Colonial. Again, there are better teams in the play-in system from a ranking perspective, but we are trying to make the regular season more meaningful. And if you just say it and don't put it in the system, then it won't happen. Hosting and just having to win one game on your home floor is a huge advantage and would make the regular season meaningful, but not to the point where you're handing out automatic bids for regular season champs. We do not want that. That's even worse. If your solution is to make the regular season champ the automatic qualifier, then what's the conference tournament for? Then what about a league where you have four teams within a game of each other? We saying that only one of those teams is good enough. We're back to where we started with every league just getting one team. This gives everybody a chance for multiple teams. How would it play out? Who would be the other teams? Why are there eight hosts and 16 spots up for grabs? I'll answer that. Obviously, your eight hosts only have to win one game. The next best eight teams are assigned to one of those eight cities. They don't go up against the host. It's like the first two rounds where you have eight cities, but two teams get out of each. Same thing here. Your eight hosts and your next best eight teams don't play each other. They could be from the same conference, and they only have to win one game. And the other teams, the other 32 teams, have to win two games, and that allows every conference to have a team. So after you give the best available team from each conference, You guarantee the regular season champs get in. You fill out the field with the remaining teams. And just to let you know where that would be, your play-in bubble is going to be somewhere in the mid-90s, mid to lower 90s, which just so happens this year to be a bunch of teams from the Atlantic 10, UMass, St. Joe's, George Mason, LSU, Indiana, Louisiana Tech. Those type of teams are going to be on the bubble. Who gets in to the play-in? Teams like Memphis, Boston College, Iowa, Minnesota, SMU, UNLV from the Mountain West. And then, yeah, you're going to have teams that are ranked outside the top 150, but they can be great stories too. You don't just have to be a conference champ. I love the fact that in the Summit League, a first-year eligible St. Thomas, which played a great schedule this year, would have a chance via the play-in tournament. And I know, conventional thought, and this is why we're trying to change the system, is that league should only get one team. Well, okay, maybe they'll only get one team. But instead of just predetermining that, like in my AL East example, which is blatantly unfair, so is the college basketball system. Yeah, the conference tournament will decide who automatically gets in, but instead of automatically deciding that the Summit League and the Big Sky, whatever conference you like, is only going to get one team, their second best team gets a chance to play teams from other conferences and decide it on the court as opposed to on a spreadsheet. Some of the other teams that would get a chance in this system: Chattanooga, UMass Lowell, American U. That was kind of a close your eyes and point thing, picking the best team from the Patriot, where there was a four-way tie for second. We went with American U because they were the only team that was not below 500. But you get the point. Sure, you're going to have some teams that aren't that great, but when you allow for the room to give every mid-major a chance, a real chance for multiple teams, it's worth it. And of course, I kind of played it out how you could do it. I mentioned you could have two teams from the same conference be in the same city. And by the way, it's probably assumed, but just to state it officially, teams from the same conference cannot play each other. Here's how it could go at the Yuengling Center. The team opposite them would be a team called UCF. The other two teams on that side would be Memphis and Eastern Kentucky, where the Bulls would get the winner between LSU and Sam Houston State. I don't think any of that would be boring. And again, these best non-hosts are the UNLV, Iowa, Kansas State, Ohio State, Utah, Virginia Tech, even SMU sorts. You could have fun with the geography. For example, Bradley is a host that has Ohio State, Butler, and Indiana, and Toledo, and that St. Thomas team I told you about. So that's how you would decide it and think about how it would play out. Two rounds of a play-in, you could just have them all on 2 days to determine the field. Then again, don't bracket yet. Play the first round across 2 days, which is what we just had on a Thursday and a Friday, to get it from 96 to 64. The regular season, again, would have meaning, especially for the best teams in the country, because the top 32, the ones that had the best regular seasons, get to sit all of this out. They get a double bye to basically the round of 64, and this is when we get into how the actual tournament would look. First of all, yeah, there'd be some different situations. I don't think you could wait until all the conference tournaments are done, have your selection Sunday, sit back a day, then have the play-in rounds, then have the first round. All that action's going to be great, but you're going to have the teams that get a bypass all of that be waiting around for, in some cases, 2 weeks. So here's how to announce the play-in rounds while the conference tournaments are still going on. Not have a gap day. The only gap day when there's no action is going to be take a breather and fill out your bracket day between that first round and the traditional 64 on in. And going back to giving the what are going to be the four mega conferences a little bit of something, this would be the way you could announce the play-in teams and get everybody where they're going and let the hosts know they're hosting while the ACC, SEC, Big 10, and Big 12 tournaments are still going. Otherwise, think about it. If there's an NC State or even a more stunning team that would not get an at-large initially is making a run, you couldn't really announce the full play-in field because, you know, you'd have a team that could be an at-large, but an NC State could bump into the play-in field, etc. So now, go ahead and say that if you make the final four of those top four tournaments, in other words, the semifinals, you are guaranteed a spot in the play-in field, and you get to skip the first round, at worst, if you don't get an at-large. Even if you're below 500, two things here that you know the power leagues will go, yes, that's what we deserve. One is a team with a losing record, again, you have to make the semifinals, would be eligible for the postseason. Right now, the only way a team with a losing record can make the NCAA tournament is if they win their conference tournament. So for these four leagues, they get that exemption, and it also makes it so that possible complaint of, well, our team that went 16-18 is ranked in the top 50. They deserve a chance. That's out the window. Yeah, they will get a chance, but you have to make the semifinal. There's no mystery here. If you go 16-19, you got to win a few games, and you don't even have to win your conference tournament. In fact, you can stop two wins shy of winning your conference tournament by making the semifinals. And then to really bring it home for the egos, I mean, the needs of the power conferences, but also in the interest of keeping things moving, the conference finalists are both assured an automatic spot. I know that sounds crazy, but first of all, think about it. If you get through an 18-team tournament, I don't know if they're going to have that many teams. There will be 18 in the Big Ten and ACC, I think, last time I checked my math. You're probably going to the NC tournament no matter what. Secondly, you can guarantee that the conference tournament champs get that bye past the first round, so there's still something to play for. Thirdly, the math is better. Instead of, remember, we're going to have 31 conferences next year. 31 automatics and 49 at-larges to get to 80, and then you have your 16 play-ins. It becomes two automatics for each of those top four leagues, so it's 35 automatic spots and 45 at-larges, which is better math for what that's worth. But the main thing is giving those automatics allows you to not just set the play-in situation, but to go ahead and set the first round up to a point so that you're not sitting around and having the committee have to come up with all these different contingencies. You know who your automatics are, and you can move it along. So here's how it would go to me anyway, and we'll fly through this when I'm thinking anyway. And of course, once the NCAA listens to this and fast-tracks the expansion with the play-in tournament idea, we'll make everything official. Now, this is, I'm going to try not to make it confusing because there's a lot of different rounds here. There's two rounds of play-in, 2 days of first round to get it from 96 to 64. And then what we all know as what begins on Thursday, the quote-unquote real tournament begins. Remember, the best 32 teams get to sit all the build-up out and begin on Thursday and Friday. So in interest of getting it to having those traditional Thursday and Friday games actually happen on Thursday and Friday, here's what I would do. The previous Thursday and Friday is when the Big Four conference semis and finals are held. Thursday at noon is when you announce the play-in field, because remember, you know who all your automatics are, you know who your teams are going to be. The only thing you might not know is if teams that are still going in the conference tournaments, if they don't make the finals, could have to play in the play-in round, so you might have to keep a couple holes open until after Thursday. But you want to announce the play-in field Thursday so the teams can get ready to play Saturday and Sunday. After Thursday, so you could call it Find Out Friday, is when you find out if you're actually in the tournament or not, because if you're not in the play-in field, you're, in some cases, definitely going to know, but you want to know for sure. Remember, since we have already said that the top four conferences, both finalists get automatics, you can announce who your top 32 teams are so that everybody else that's in the tournament knows they're playing in the first round Monday and Tuesday. That's right. Play-in games Saturday, Sunday. First round games Monday, Tuesday. Wednesday is breather and fill out your bracket Wednesday. And then the 64 teams like we have now play out Thursday and Friday. There's a lot more to it as far as where do you hold those first rounds? Do you have them at the same sites as the regionals? I say no, because first of all, it'd be very confusing, way too many decisions for the committee to make there, not just from geography, but from fairness. You could have the perfect bracket placed, and then what if you have a city where, think about it, you'd have 12 teams in each town instead of 8. Each city would have 4 teams that sit out the first round, but how would you know that you don't have upsets in all of those first round games? And in this city, you're getting the best team in the country having to play the toughest possible opponent for its second round game. And over here, where all these upsets are, everybody's skating into the third round kind of thing. So that's why I say the first round would be held in other cities across Monday and Tuesday. And yeah, you'd have some teams that are going from a conference tournament to a play-in site, to a first round site, to a regional site. We kind of already have that with Dayton, A and B. How do you avoid having to go from one city to the next, to the next, to the next? Be one of the best teams in the country. Hey, we're back to a meaningful regular season, aren't we? I could go on, as you have probably figured out, but I'll stop there. I think the NCAA tournament is great. It's the best thing we have going in college sports and probably in sports in the United States, but I think it could be better. I think it could be more inclusive. I don't think it's cool that you have so many fan bases and teams that aren't just Cinderella story types. These are legitimate basketball programs that know going into a season, no matter how great of a year you have, you could have one slip up against a good opponent, and that's it. You're NIT bound, and we know there's nothing wrong with the NIT, but it would not be, in my opinion, a bad thing to allow more teams. In this case, you're not guaranteeing a bunch of teams. You're giving a lot more teams a chance other than that one chance that they get every year. Thanks for taking your time to check it out. Appreciate it. I'm Derek Sharp.